Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Indeed, the 19th day of September 2013 turns out to be a thorn in the side Thursday on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you can find the listen live stream. That's also where you'll find the links to the chat room. Jump on into the chat room. I'm sure we will have a lovely time this evening. Chat room moderator Sparky already standing by. Good evening, Sparky. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the PayPal button and the traditional mail address, which, if you don't feel like going and looking for it, I'll tell you now, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. That's where you send checks and money orders if you don't like to use PayPal and you do want to be able to continue to get this broadcast. Checks and money order should, of course, be made payable not to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see the money, but rather should be made payable to Head On Communications. And I can tell you now that I'm very pleased to announce that Darlene let me know that she's willing to sponsor a challenge this evening, trying to dig us out of the hole that we are in, and it is a substantial hole, thanks to some late-breaking activity last night. We did manage to, Janie got some help, and we managed to raise $150 the last evening, which means that the fundraising goal stands at $515. Darlene, however, has put a challenge on the table, looking for 10 folks at 10 bucks apiece, 2 at 54, at 25, 5 at 20, 3 at $33.33. You know the drill. She's got $100 on the table that she is willing to match the first 10 with of the first 10 or the first $100 that comes in, and that'll take us down to only needing $315, and that's a big chunk to take out of the we're filling in the hole. So any help you can give is much appreciated. We're in a bad way here, bad and getting worse. Trying to keep things going and at the same time dealing with all kinds of bills that come due about this time of year here in this neck of the woods. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. And I've got some emails regarding last night's conversation. Oh, dear. You know, last night's attempt at telling the difference between reason and belief, between knowledge of the mind and knowledge of the heart. That kind of thing. I'll share those emails with you momentarily. But first off, I've got something that I ran across last night right after showtime. It comes from Americans Against the Tea Party. I get their updates, and wow, this is one of those that just sort of stops you in your tracks. You remember that one Onion piece, man passionate defender of Constitution that exists only in his own mind, that we refer to so frequently. You remember that one? Yeah. Well, this is a case of that. Now, the anniversary of Occupy came about just a couple of days ago. And you might recall that Occupy was dedicated to principles of income equality, pointing out the income inequality that is rampant in this country today. But that was largely lost on the teabaggers and other mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks who are absolutely baffled by things like shoelaces and wheelbarrows. The disease is spreading. You remember when Adam versus the Man Kokesh was going to have an armed march on Washington, D.C.? Well, some other teabagging libertarian type freaks have decided that they want to march on D.C. too. And well, it's coming right. But never mind me talking about it. By all means, let's let them talk about it.
Well, hello again, everybody. Pretty self-explanatory. You see it there. Follow me to D.C. Stop the corruption against the Constitution. The truckers are going to shut D.C. down for 3 days. And I'll link you below to the Facebook page where you can get behind these guys. Please mirror this video or do your own. Share the information. This is very encouraging, not only because it's more people standing up to D.C. and the bullshit, but also because about a month and a half ago, a young man here locally in Conway, New Hampshire, who is a trucker, came up to me after seeing my car and said to me that the truckers were organizing and going to shut down D.C. And now it's happening. And that's outstanding. And if you knew my neck of the woods, it's encouraging to see an activist of any kind. So much love. Many thanks. Again, feel free to either remix this or make your own. The link to the Facebook page will be below. Support these guys, and you know, maybe I've reached out to them. I'm hoping they're going to join us again on the 5th of November for the Million Mask March. So DC, brace up, because we're coming, and we told you we were gonna, and you should have expected us.
That's stupid. It hurts us.
Yes, it does, Gollum. Yes, it truly does. So here on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Well, you get the idea. The truckers is going, and I thought, what? The truckers are, wow, it's been a while since I've seen the guys. No, it's not the drive-by truckers. It's a bunch of yahoos who run around in tractor trailers listening to AM radio. Listening to Glenn Beck, listening to Alex Jones. And so they're going to take their big rigs to Washington, D.C., and they're going to shut her down to stop the corruption again, the Constitution. Corruption against the Constitution. Yes, yes. The true patriots in America are truck drivers. We got a dumbass convoy traveling through the night. You know, yeah. Me and RJ and the kids was on a camp out in the mountains, and we had us one of them You Drive Them Army Jeep cars, which we... Never mind. Teabaggers. Can't live with them. Can't send them to the moon. You heard that, goober. What do you reckon he actually knows about the Constitution? Well, I know it says that this here is a Christian nation. That's and they're gonna and Agenda 21. A million truckers ride to D.C. to protest Obama's fuel policy. And they think they're patriots. When they're little more than cannon fodder in the culture wars. They're protesting Obama's fuel policy by wasting fuel. Okay. Naturally, this protest movement has been endorsed by the Beckerhead. Maybe they can get David Barton to speak at their rally. and talk about how Thomas Jefferson was a long-haul truck driver, only he used mules to pull his truck. It's going to be a little difficult to do this, which kind of goes to show that, well, you know, your average teabagger is atne ute aitbre, if you one what I inne. I've seen this happen. There's lots of places in D.C. where various and sundry police agencies are stationed on corners with those great big, and I mean for as heavy as steel things as they are, man, they go kabang, and they're up in the middle of the street when you try to bring your rig a little too close to something they don't want you in, and they jump in their cars, and they flash their lights and hit their sirens, and they spin around in the street, and they jump out, and they pull their guns. I mean, I have seen this happen. But they're going to drive their big rigs for freedom. And the right, and perhaps, I'm sure many of them, will be driving their big rigs for the right to arm bears. Gollum had it right. The stupid. It hurts us. Real. Real. So this one's going out to all the teabagging patriot truckers who are going to stand up against corruption, against the Constitution. What the... I mean, just linguistically, just for a minute. What the... does that even mean? Corruption against the Constitution? Corruption of the Constitution? Corruption of constitutional values? What does corruption again the Constitution mean? Idiots. Driving along through the night, listening to Glenn Beck reruns, listening to Limbaugh reruns, listening to Alex Jones telling them about the false flag and the one world government, and the upcoming takeover of Lubbock, Texas by the blue-helmeted UN forces behind that Kenyan Muslim one-world government promoting anti-colonialist deep-seated hatred of white people, Barack Hussein Obama, Kenyan Muslim. This is for you, patriot truckers.
Songs were true. Reckon I'd like my whiskey drinking a whole lot more than I do. But I don't know about the good life, baby. Not so sure it's for me. I'd much rather be home rolling with you than watching Tom Snyder on TV. I wish I was a big rig rolling on home to you. I wish I was a big rig. Looking women out there who think I am a star. Drinking and snorting ain't really where I am. If I had my own two ways, I'd be rolling home to Alabama. I wish I was a big rig rolling on home to you. I wish I was a big rig.
Come on back and talk to Teddy Bear. Jesus Christ. I suppose it's possible that the guy who did the voiceover for the, what was it, Million Mask March, too? They're going to put on what? And I'm sure there'll be some Americans for Prosperity money involved. Crap just flows down like water rolling downhill if you've got some right-wing bit of batshittery to roll out. So, just put that on your schedule. What is it? What is it? October 11th to the 13th, the 3-day strike. See, this is where learning a little bit of history would come in handy. The strikes, you see, that have definite endpoints aren't, and I want to put this just right. Strikes! The whole point of a strike is to withdraw your labor and continue to withhold one's labor until one's demands are met. Those demands are usually in the way of some sort of economic justice, not some nebulous and harebrained and itsy-bitsy pea-brained expression of corruption against the Constitution. Fools. The mad fools. If you go over to their Facebook page, and I encourage you not to, you'll find that these knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing gear jammers have a mission statement. Everybody got to have a mission statement. The American people are sick and tired of the corruption that is destroying America. We therefore declare a general strike on the weekend of October 11 to 13, 2013. Truck drivers will not haul freight. Americans can strike in solidarity with truck drivers. Corruption destroying America. Maybe I would have a nickel's worth of respect for these goobs if they were actually acknowledging the corruption that is, in fact, destroying America. Filthy money in politics, the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, so-called Crossroads GPS, fracking. Oh, but I bet you they love them some fracking. Mountaintop removal, the tar sands pipeline, but no, they love them some tar sands pipeline. No, what's destroying America is that one in our White House. Corruption, Agenda 21. Common Core. Speaking of Common Core, cranky old Ron Paul made his way onto the TV set this morning. Yeah, that was precious. He went on to say that he went on the TV box to tell the viewers of MSNBC that he wanted 20% of America. To be homeschooled, you know, so they can learn about what happened when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor and the Japanese attacked the Alamo and Lewis and Clark discovered Easter Island and things like that. Oh, good call. Good call, Ron and Raleigh. One more to send out. Can't resist. It's just, it begs. It begs. Going out to the Patriot truckers driving through the night. The teabagging Patriot truckers.
Yeah, Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben? Come on.
You got a copy on me, dumbass?
Big Ben, for sure. By golly, it's clean clear to Flagtown. Come on.
Looks like we got a teabagging convoy.
Big Ben there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
I smell a parody.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
I love the chorus. The backup singers. We got a teabag convoy, stupid in the night.
Back off them hogs. Good 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger. Them hogs is getting intense up here.
Yeah, them hogs is getting intense, and you teabaggers ain't washed in a while, neither. Thank you, Ron. Thank you kindly. Irish Dave pointing out, you know them captains of the open roads know that talking like a pirate is real elitist and against the corruption of the Holy Constitution and its sacred 10th Amendment, too, also. You know, they support the Second Amendment because they drive with bare arms. Breaking news coming in from Kim from New York City. Subject line, SOBs. And I don't think she's talking about these teabagging truckers either. Just want to let you know the breaking news is that the House just passed a bill cutting $40 billion in food stamps. Bastards. Yeah, that's going to be great for all us useless eaters out here. If only teabaggers would have to go hungry once in a while. Get your hands off my government food stamps! Jesus. But no, like I said, we got a bumper crop of the stupid this evening for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Not the least of which is cranky old Ron Paul. You got to hear this. I don't often give credit to Morning Joe for getting much of anything right. But Caddy Kay of the BBC was sitting in, and Joe and Mika were nowhere to be found, when Ron Paul, hustling a book and his concept of getting 20% of America's school-age children to be dumbed down, well, Caddy Kay, she identified what may very well be deemed a flaw in cranky old Ron Paul's reasoning.
Long term, for us to innovate, to come to your book, how do we repair an education system that can educate and prepare the next generation of leaders and job creators and innovators in the country?
Slowly. Yeah. And that is the approach. The goal that I have there is to offer an alternative to sort of what we're talking about, because we've been taught for so long a school of thought on economics and personal liberty and the importance of the individual versus, you know, everybody coming together and managing. I want people to be able to homeschool their children.
And he wants them to homeschool their children about the values of personal liberty and not coming together to solve problems, because he's a lone wolf, right? A lone wolf, Ron Paul is. Personal liberty, rugged individualism, pulling our bootstraps up one bootstrap at a time in that boat that is all them boats that are raised by a rising tide of liberty! Wolverines! Yeah. I listened this morning just to see. Okay, I watched too. It is, after all, television. Just to see if maybe he'd tell the story of the heroic butcher in his neighborhood somewhere around Pittsburgh back when he was a boy during the Second World War, who protected liberty by selling black market beef that was intended to go to our soldiers fighting overseas against world fascism. But no, he didn't get around to that story.
Not everybody. This is designed to pick out the leaders who want to, and maybe 20% might be interested in doing this. But they would at least see these would be leaders who then would be talking about running for Congress and understand why the Federal Reserve is a problem today.
Really? That's what he wants out of homeschooling? For little Jesus freak children to understand why the Federal Reserve is a problem? Uncle Cranky, I think you're going to have a ways to go before you get to there. Or I don't know, maybe you'll teach them the ABCs, but... Ay, Jesus. Can we teach them what to do when the armed madman walks into the school with the automatic weapon before we teach them about the dangers posed by the Federal Reserve, Ron Paul? Can we please teach them how to duck and cover and maybe hide behind their little Barbie Princess Sparkle Pony Kevlar book bags before we start teaching them your paranoid theories about money and free silver and... I want to teach him about liberty. And my boy can teach him about Aqua Buddha.
We have been conditioned in all our schools that it's good to have a very, very robust foreign policy to be involved in all these countries. We've been taught that the Federal Reserve is sacred, except for the last 5 years, people are questioning the Federal Reserve. We have been taught that deficits are good and spending is good and borrow is no
problem.
So we have to reverse that. And
what's the correlation between homeschooling and getting a better understanding of the Fed? I mean, that's
the whole thing is, my whole curriculum and everything I talk about is based on the freedom philosophy, which is what I've been talking about for 30 years.
The freedom philosophy, where your local butcher is free to make sure that some hungry boys on the front don't have the food they need to eat because a freedom-loving liberty protector in Pittsburgh was selling it on the black market. Freedom! Ah, man! That's some authentic frontier gibberish.
But so the education would be quite different. It would be something where young people would learn at their own pace. They would pick, and they would do it over the Internet. It wouldn't cost as much. But they're going to be taught different economics. They would have a different perspective on history. For instance, every one of us has been taught that one of our greatest presidents was Woodrow Wilson. But if you're liberal or conservative, if you look at Woodrow Wilson, he violently abused our civil liberties. He was the one that told us that we had to march around the world. He was the one that changed our foreign policy. And I'd like to show that some of our presidents, the only great presidents, have been the warmongers. And maybe the people who argued for negotiations might be a better president. So it'll be a different approach. But it'll be upfront. It'll be the freedom philosophy. It'll be based on individual freedom and not a collectivist approach that the federal government runs everything down. Now we're coming up with a core curriculum and just...
Bingo! Bingo! Who had 4 minutes and 50 seconds for core curriculum? We're still waiting for Agenda 21 to be mentioned. I shouldn't have let the voices guy out of the studio. I could have used a reprise of Gollum just now. Yeah, really, no kidding. That was Ferg. Ferg does an absolutely stunning Gollum impression. Kind of proud of it. Well, thank you, Jack. A little compliment goes a long way. Jack, you're killing me, cracking me up. Oh, don't blame me. It's cranky old Uncle Freedom here. This collectivist notion, you know, where we realize that this country is only as strong as its weakest links, and that we judge the goodness of a people by how we treat those least fortunate among us. Yeah, that collectivism. And every child will be given the illustrated big print version of Ayn Rand's
flatly shrugged. And there will be coloring book sections for the wildcat sex scenes between her and Hank Reardon, where they talk about how they want each other like a whore.
Do go on.
More mandates and more controls, and how do you satisfy people who don't like the textbooks? You know, there's no way you can solve that problem.
How do you satisfy the people who don't like the textbooks? Interesting you would bring that up, cranky old Ron Paul. Because I just happen to have that story right here. Yeah? What do you do when you don't like the books? Well, back down in Texas, Stan, we have the story of Geyer High School junior Bree Getz. Now, she was doing her homework, and her homework came from a book called U.S. History Preparing for Advanced Placement Exams, because that's really the reason you learn your American history, so you can do well on the AP test. And there on page 102, she saw some of that anti-freedom collectivism. She saw in the book that it says, quote, "The people have a right to keep and bear arms in a state militia. It seems to be worded weird." It seems to be worded weird? So that's when she took the 734-page book to her daddy, Sean Getz. And Sean Getz is a freedom-protecting, lawful gun owner, and we must be very solicitous of his tender feelings lest he blow our freaking heads off. He said, "That passage is incorrect because it implies that the Second Amendment is restricted to the state militia." I mean, I didn't want to jump to conclusions and say, oh, they're trying to indoctrinate our children. But the more I thought about it, it needs a lot more scrutiny. What do you do, asks crazy old cranky Uncle Freedom, when they don't like the textbook? What do you do about that? Well, you send them to homeschool, where you explain that George Washington wanted an automatic weapon placed in every crib for every young American baby. And Ben Franklin said, "You'll have a republic if you've got the grenades to keep it." Now, the Geyer High School is apparently in the Denton ISD, Independent School District. And the Denton ISD said, "The teachers and staff are aware of this summary statement and are teaching the amendments from the classroom textbook American Pageant." Oh, F all, you're kidding. The American History real textbook is American Pageant? Miss Al-Qaeda? Jesus. "Please be assured that Denton ISD history teachers are disseminating the correct information on the Second Amendment." So, by Wednesday, the stink raised by Sean Getz, freedom-protecting, lawful gun-owning patriot, had caused such an uproar that the authors of the workbook announced that they were hurrying to revise the text. And I can't blame them, because Sean Getz, being a tender-hearted, lawful gun owner, could transform into an awful gun owner at the squeeze of a trigger. And what, you know, who wants to die? Who wants to be the last person to die for a workbook? Co-author John J. Newman said, "Well, there was no devious intention in the definition. Duck! Incoming!" Because, see, Sean Getz, he knows when the when the freedom haters are about. He said, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but clearly these authors interpreted the amendment in favor of gun control. I'm mainly concerned how this ends up in our school system. What do we do when they don't like the textbooks? Well, you change the textbooks so that the lawful gun owners won't splatter your brains all over the wall. That's what you do. You bow down. You knuckle under. You give up. Because the distance between lawful gun owner and awful gun owner is less than the circumference of a rifle round. It's about the distance between not pulling the trigger and firing the weapon. That's what you do about the textbooks. Jesus, these people. But anyway, getting back to cranky old Ron Paul.
Other than the fact, offer people other choices.
If you want to get to 20% of children being homeschooled, that's going to mean a vast...
Oh, my dear, she speaks with one of those accents from one of those countries that doesn't love freedom. And she's a woman. This
a collectivist approach that more controls, and how do you satisfy people who don't like the textbooks? You know, there's no way you can solve that problem other than the fact offer people other choices.
If you want to get to 20% of children being homeschooled, that's going to mean a vast drop in the number of women in the workforce, because it is largely women who are doing the homeschooling. A lot of women can't afford to give up their jobs and homeschool their children. A lot of families can't afford that. And do we actually want to be encouraging women not to take part in the workforce, because we know how valuable that diversity is? I'm concerned about advocating homeschooling on this level when women are having such a hard time already staying in the workforce.
Of course.
Well, of course you are. You upper-class twit. You don't love freedom. You don't appreciate individual liberty. That is why we had to shoot you back during 1776, you see. Et sec. That's why we had to have the original Tea Party. Because they didn't let them Englands didn't love freedom the way we had learned to love freedom in the land that we had carved out of a vast and empty wilderness after we was done killing the people who lived here so as we could make it vast and empty.
Of course, those are the problems created by what I'm trying to correct, because they have to be in the workforce and they have to work and not take care of kids because of the system.
Wait! Stop it, cranky Uncle Freedom. Women in the workforce, did you hear that? Did you just hear that? Women in the workforce are a problem. I didn't say that. Ron Paul, liberty advocate. Sit, liberty. Said that. We want to correct that. We want to correct that, meaning we want to correct women being in the workforce. From time to time, I point out that it is the ultimate goal of the Republican Party and their libertarian pals to drive women back into the kitchen, take their shoes away from them, get them good and barefoot and good and pregnant, and have them there where they can homeschool the little ones. Proof. Rat cheer.
system that we have, because it's survival for them. So you are absolutely right. There is a choice. Matter of fact, my wife and I are talking about this. Even if the conditions would have been bad in our public school system when we were raising our kids, we probably wouldn't have homeschooled, you know, for various reasons. So it's not going to be for everybody. It's not like you're closing down the schools and everybody's going to be homeschooled. There's going to be choices to be made, and some people will go out of their way for their children.
Right, okay. Some people will go out of their way for their children. And the rest of the parents who send them to, what does Neil Bortz call it, government schools? And the rest of us will just not go out of our way for our children because, you know, we just don't love them that much. We'll just send them up there to be indoctrinated in collectivism. Shoot. I wish my kids were being indoctrinated in collectivism. I wish my kids were being taught anything about collectivism. I wish my kids were being taught about that there was something besides capitalism out there. Hell, it's hard enough around here to get kids taught that there's something besides the coal industry to go into. Jesus Christ. So to review, according to cranky old Uncle Freedom, if you don't homeschool, you're not going out of the way to do good by your kids. You know, we've got a little bit of real-world experience with homeschooling here. Back about 2 years ago, after 3 years of pretty consistent bullying, Ferg, whom you heard a little bit ago, had been badly harmed, both physically and emotionally, by what was happening inside the school system. And so we pulled him. And we homeschooled him. Now, granted, we didn't use a biology textbook called Of Pandas and People, that talks about back when Adam and Eve, and by the way, we're going to go back to this topic in a few minutes, back when Adam and Eve rode their dinosaurs to church on Sunday. We did our best, Agnes and I, to teach him things that meant things. And we gave him real-world experience. He learned, for instance, what it means to be a citizen and go to Washington, D.C., and learn how to speak and how to present oneself and how to advocate for changes in the law within the legislative body of the United States, to wit, the Congress. And after a year and a half of that, we had a conversation this past summer as school was about to start, and Ferg looked at me and said, "I love you, Dad, and I love you, Mom. I'm going to try to gut it out through school. I'm going to try to graduate. I want to walk across the stage. I love you both, but the isolation of being homeschooled is just tearing me to pieces." But cranky old Grandpa Freedom here doesn't take that into account. All he can think about is all those slacker parents who aren't homeschooling their children. But let's go back to cranky old Grandpa Freedom.
I agree with you. It is not going to be easy because we're facing the consequences. I saw an article yesterday of a woman working two jobs, and she was living in a shelter, and she couldn't pay her bills because her cost of living goes up much faster than wages. That's another characteristic of this monetary system. So that.
No, you dumbass! That's a characteristic of capitalism! What are you, incapable of learning? What a fool. And yet there are so many people that have to, Ron Paul, oh, he's so cool, man, you know? I mean, like, he believes in freedom. Here. And he wants us to be able to smoke whatever we want to smoke. I mean, like, I would vote for him any time, Mom. Because
Oh, me again? Because I like freedom.
Her wages go down and the cost of living goes up because of our monetary. Really, the Federal Reserve causes that. Son of a gun. I thought maybe it was because capitalism is an inhumane, brutal system designed and centered upon limitless corruption and the strong eating the weak. Silly me.
That is a consequence why they have to work. But if people really want to get it done, they can. But I grant you, it will not be easy. But to continue to do what we're doing now. Harold, remember when Washington ever had trouble with their schools, they always thought if we just gave them more money, it would solve it. But the schools that get the most money aren't the best schools at all. Money does not solve this problem.
No, money never does. Money never solved any problems. Especially when you withhold it. Especially when you vote for bills in the Congress of the United States that tries to not give the money out, but rather take the money away. The system we have is not working. Public education is not a good idea. And the homeschooled kids are going to be the ones who run for Congress? You know, we were having a little resurgence of the teaching of civics in our schools, but I guess we can just ditch that. Jesus Christ. I do. I wish the earth would just open up and swallow Ron and his randy son. But of course, if it did, the earth would then vomit it back out. You know, we call it Thorn in the Side Thursday for a reason. It's deeply frustrating. The distance between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner, Irish Dave noting, that's an L of a distance. He'll be here all night. Try the veal. Ron and Raleigh asking, Woodrow Wilson, wasn't he the one that said Birth of a Nation was history writ with lightning? Yeah, especially the Klan scenes. Marty pointing out, no, money never solved any education problems, which is why the charter, private, and religious schools are all free, and which is why the charter, private, and religious schools want lots of taxpayer dollars and First Amendment be damned. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I mentioned a little bit ago, what's his name, Sean Getz, who convinced a couple of workbook authors to change their text in the book so that they wouldn't have their brains splattered all over or wake up with a horse's head in their... Right, yeah. Well, that ain't the only example. We could, for instance, run over to North Carolina Stan. Remember how Ron and Raleigh said that... there were just bushels of bad laws being passed here and there and everywhere. Yeah. Well, apparently in North Carolina, Stan, they're about one matchbook with Draw Spunky on the back of it away from just going full-on book burning. Article out of the Asheboro Courier Tribune about the Randolph County Board of Education. Now, in Randolph County, they had a summer reading program. That summer reading program was for high school juniors. And they were suggested readings, things to, you know, get a hand, help you get a handle on, oh, I don't know, learning. And on that summer reading list, were three books. Passing by Nella Larson. Black Like Me by John Howard Griffin. And finally, Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. Invisible Man was first published in 1952. It is, among other things, noted as being one of the most important books of the 20th century. No, really. Time Magazine in 2010. No, not just the 20th century. Time Magazine in 2010 said that Invisible Man was one of the top 100 English language novels of all time. Time Magazine called it, and this is a quote, the quintessential American picaresque of the 20th century. And there weren't any asterisks about, and it's dirty, too. But according to the Asheboro Courier Tribune, the Randolph County Board of Education, seven members, got together and had themselves a little talk because a parent by the name of Kimietta Parson had complained about her youngster having this book on her summer reading list. Kimietta Parson wrote in her complaint to the Randolph County Board of Education, this novel is not so innocent. Instead, this book is filthier, too much for teenagers. You must respect all religions and point of views when it comes to the parents and what they feel is age appropriate for their young children to read without their knowledge. Is it just me, or is there a misplaced modifier language syntax problem there? You must respect all religions and point of views when it... Okay, wouldn't that be points of view? Oh, I know, I'm just being a grammar Nazi now, aren't I? You must respect all religions and points of view when it comes to the parents and what they feel is age appropriate for their young children to read without their knowledge. How does one read without knowledge? Probably about the same way someone would throw me down the stairs my hat. Or throw Mama from the train. A kiss. And so, by a 5-2 vote, really, 5-2, in Randolph County, North Carolina, Stan, they have declared that one of the 100 most important English language novels of all time is not suitable to be read by little Randolph County high school students who, whatever language is in there, have heard more and dirtier words probably emanating from their own parents' mouths in any given week than we'll hear on the pages of Invisible Man. Board Chair Tommy MacDonald and members Tracy Boyles, Gary Cook, Matthew Lambeth, and Gary Mason voted for banning the book. Board Vice Chair Emily Coltrane and member Todd Cutler actually introduced a motion to keep the book in the schools. They lost the first motion by 5-2, and then by 5-2, the book was banned. Now, see, the children did not have to read all three books. They could read Black Like Me, they could read Passing, or they could read Invisible Man. But even having that choice was unacceptable. I guess Soul on Ice is just right out the door, huh? I would love to see all 12 pages of the parents' complaint. In it, the narrator writes in the first person, emphasizing his individual experiences and his feelings about the events portrayed in his life. This novel is not so innocent. and the filthy part. This book is freely in your library for them to read. She also didn't like the sexual content of the book. Now, I'll tell you what, you want to read a nasty, well, I mean, it has redeeming artistic, but look up a book called Crumb. C-R-U-M. I'm betting it would make Kimmyetta Parsons probably have to use the fainting couch and the smelling salts. What do you do when the parents don't like the book? This book won the National Book Award for Fiction in 1953, by the way. Just in case anybody was wondering. Maka writing, so is North Carolina replacing the book with My Pet Goat? I would not be surprised. It just goes on and on and on. And then of course, one other little, well, we've got a couple, really. But this little gem. It's been all over the for-profit media today, which is more than Gen Op, Generation Opportunity, the little right-wing libertarian gang of freaks who produced this slick and glossy ad could have hoped for. And once again, the for-profit media have completely gotten it wrong. Now, some of this is visual, so I'll have to describe it if you haven't seen it already, but there is some audio involved. There is a new front has opened up in the ongoing assault on the notion of the Affordable Care Act's validity. That new front is an assault on young people having health insurance. Once upon a time in this country, we took a dim view of adults telling children to do things that were directly contrary to their own well-being. I mean, I'm not talking about encourage them to smoke or anything. I mean, we were all for that for a very long time. But no, if you had an adult standing on a street corner passing out funny little cigarettes and saying, "Hey, kid, the first one's free," we didn't like that very well. We have laws, often referred to as contributing to the delinquency of a minor, that speak to things like adults who go out and buy beer for kids who are, or liquor or wine or whatever, for kids who are too young to purchase it for themselves. We charge them with contributing to the delinquency of a minor and fine them, and sometimes, well, God Almighty, we even put them in jail. I guess those days are over. Because this well-funded group has produced ads that they seek to run to encourage young people not to get health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. Here's the first one. It's about a young man who goes to the doctor.
Okay, everything seems normal. Oh, and I see you're new to Obamacare as well.
Yeah, I saw the ads and I figured, why not?
Take your pants off.
Okay.
All right, hop up here, lay down, and bring your knees to your chest.
Is this necessary?
We'll try to make this quick.
Hear the carnival music, the kind of creepy, semi-off-key carnival horror movie music there? Now, you got a young kid who I guess would be represented as perhaps in college or just out of college, maybe 22, 23 years old. The place where I froze the screen, he's lying on his side on a doctor's office examining table. And you know what's about to happen. He's being subjected to a prostate examination. One. The last I checked, generally speaking, the standard of care for males is to begin checking their prostate when they're about 40. This young man is nowhere near 40. So the doctor walks out of the room and the creepy music keeps playing. Uh-oh. Did you hear that bass note and the swirling high-pitched strings? Uh-oh. So now the camera pans, pulls back, and the young man is on his side on the doctor's office examining table with his knees pulled up and his backside bared, and he's got his arms wrapped around his knees, and his naked bottom is presented as Uncle Sam pops up from behind the table. And the closing message, don't let the government play doctor. In other words, young men of America, don't let Uncle Sam butt rape you. Really? Somewhere out there, and this is going to be one of those moments where I really show just how... Somewhere out there, in the halls of the rented offices of Generation Opportunity, there's someone who's going to have a male member of their family develop prostate cancer. It's almost a sure thing. What was that statistic I ran across? By the time most men who reach 80 years of age, no matter their other health issues, have the beginnings of prostate cancer. That's more of that intelligent design at work there. Somebody in Generation Opportunity is going to be related to someone that they ostensibly love who develops prostate cancer, and you know what? Deserving's got nothing to do with it. But if you think me saying something like that is vicious, how many more hundreds of thousands of times more vicious is it for the sheer sake of nothing more than greedy, nasty, gutter level, dirty ass politics? Is it to stigmatize men from having their prostates checked? Because after all, we've already got a culture that is so bass ackwards that men will go without screenings to the point where prostate cancer becomes something that is terminal, simply because of the weird puritanical views we have about the rectum. Rectum damn near killed him. Often does. So thank you, Generation Opportunity. Anyone involved with you, any member of your organization who is male, I wish the speediest prostate cancer upon you. God, if only he was real, damn you. But that ain't all. See, they got one for the boys, and they got one for the girls. Uncle Sam is not only interested in butt-raping young men, he has his own special plan for the women folk.
Oh, I see you chose to sign up for Obamacare.
Yeah, it's actually my first time here.
Well, here we are then. Change it to a gown, and the doctor will see you soon.
Okay, well, your vitals look good. Any changes in your diet or exercise?
Mm-hmm.
All right, can you swing on over, scoot on down, and try to make yourself comfortable?
Really? That's what they ask you before a gynecological exam? Because I've never had one. Any changes in your diet or exercise? Because I would think that they would ask about, you know, are your periods regular? Unaccounted for bleeding? Any pain? Any changes in your diet or exercise? And then we get a visual of this white-coated medical professional pulling out the dreaded stirrups. It goes without saying that just as men are not nearly aware enough of the threats posed by prostate disease, there are far too many women in this country who do not have access to appropriate care for their reproductive organs. And yeah, it's the same principle at work here.
Okay, let's have a look.
And that's when the doctor walks out of the office. Let's have a look. And it's the same thing in the guy one, too. The medical professional says, let's have a look. We'll get this over as quickly as possible, and then walks out of the room. By now, you know what's coming. Standing up from beneath the examination table, again, is Uncle Sam. And the young woman, shocked, with her knees raised in the stirrups, flinches and begins to back up. Did you hear the little scream? Wasn't that cute? Don't let government play doctor. Opt out of Obamacare. Oh, that ratchety sound? That's Uncle Sam clicking open a big old stainless steel speculum. 'Cause see, he's gonna rape her. I don't think I've, in recent memory, seen anything that quite typifies the Republican right-wing war on women, sexuality, health care, and common decency, all at the same time, quite like these so-called ads by Generation Opportunity, urging people to opt out of medical care that could save their lives. Now, granted, the standards of care for prostates is to begin examining men when they're about 40. On the other hand, however, because of the prevalence of diseases of the pelvis and pelvic area in women, it's generally said to be a good idea to begin keeping an eye on things considerably earlier. So these monsters of Generation Opportunity, encouraging young people to opt out of Obamacare, are also encouraging people, men and women alike, to opt out of the very care that could save their lives. If you told me tomorrow that someone at Generation Opportunity had been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, I'm sorry, I would not be able to work up a good give a damn. I try really hard. I do. I really do. I try very hard to maintain a humane ethos that says that everybody has value on this planet, and that everybody has some kind of good in them. I can't find that for these people. And again, as I said when we began discussing this particular issue, the for-profit media have gotten this all wrong. All that they can say is that the ads are creepy, and the people from Generation Opportunity say, well, yes, they are creepy. They're meant to be creepy. Obamacare is creepy. That ain't the point. These monstrous bastards are making rape jokes. In both the male and the female version, they are making rape jokes. Oh, you're gonna get your lights screwed out by Uncle Sam if you sign up for that Obamacare. And you don't want to be getting no pap smears nor prostate tests, because if you get a pap smear, that probably means you're a whore. And, of course, if you get a prostate exam, that means you're some sort of sissy homo. Damn these freaks. And remember, this is hiding beneath the skirts of the First Amendment, masquerading as political speech when all it is hate speech. Because I've never seen Generation Opportunity produce any ads against young people having health care coverage from the for-profit insurance industry. Most of the young people that will be covered under the Affordable Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act will likely be covered under the Medicaid expansion or under their parents' own policies. And Generation Opportunity cannot tolerate that. Generation Opportunity cannot tolerate a young woman surviving an early onset of cervical cancer. Generation Opportunity wants her to die. That's what these ads mean. Because the face of Uncle Sam, it's not like a normal face. It's a great big paper mache 3D head, you know, sort of like a mascot at a football game. And he's kind of halfway smiling, smirking. Frankly, he looks a little bit like George W. Bush with white hair. By the way, these are the people who love America. And yet they take a symbol of this nation. I mean, he wears a suit made out of the American flag, for the love of God, and turn it into something tawdry and filthy. Ron and Raleigh querying, now wait a minute, Bob. Aren't these the same goobers that want mandatory transvaginal probes? You are correct, sir. See, it's not brutal if Republicans do it to advance their anti-woman agenda. Now, I've looked around all over the place. If you can find them, You're better at the internet web searching than I am. I've been looking for some Republican out there somewhere, some godforsaken soulless teabagger, some moderate, some middle of the roader. John McCain's always around a camera somewhere. You know, he's running for czar of all the Russias now. Saw that today, right? An op-ed published in Pravda in which John McCain, foreign affairs specialist, last time he had any... Well, he's proved to be... No, he wasn't really very good at bombing Vietnamese people either, was he? He was pretty good at... Had that whole crashing thing down pat, though. I haven't found a Republican, teabagger, John Bircher, paleoconservative, neoconservative. I haven't found any of them out there either so much as distancing themselves from this ad. It's not hard to find. You can go and view the thing for yourself. I would sincerely like to know from you, because it's entirely possible that I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. But isn't this a giant stinking rape joke? And really, rape jokes? Is that where we want to be? Is that appropriate in 2013? Rape jokes? I can't think of enough awful things to happen to somebody that would, for nothing more than politics, take it upon themselves to encourage a young person to not be checked for cancer. I mean, there's evil and then there's evil. I welcome your thoughts on the matter, of course. Hey, thanks, Sal. Thanks very much. Sal is the only one so far who has stepped up to match a portion of Darlene's challenge for the evening. We only have 9 more folks at $10 apiece to go. It would be awfully nice for Sal to have some help as he helps out with Darlene. And we're going to take our break. I'm going to come back in a minute. We'll come back in a little bit, well, a few minutes. We've got the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming up. We'll come back and take your calls, and I really do. I've got some feedback from last night's program that I think is worth sharing, and so that is on the way as well. I don't know how we do it, and maybe it's not worth doing since all the geniuses. The genii of the for-profit media have seen fit not to do it thus far. But what would it take to get this re-understood, these filthy ads, for what they are, as they've been described? What would it take? How do we spread that around? That's a problem that I am not equipped to solve. But I sure do welcome your input into the matter. Because on any given evening, We deal with a lot of sickening stuff from the right wing. But this is about the sickest that I have lately seen. 304-658-3333 is the number. If you'd like to reach the program via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is how you reach the program that way. If you've never done the Skype thing or we're not contacts on Skype yet, just send me a contact request. I'll okay it, and we'll get rolling. Thanks, Karen. Thank you very much. Karen has now joined Sal in supporting Darlene's challenge for the evening. Now we need 8 more folks at $10 apiece. Maybe we can make that happen. I sure hope so. All right, then. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
It's Thursday, September 19, 2013.
The benefits of climate change will still outweigh the harm.
Climate science denial on display in the House in advance of new UN report.
The CO2 problem is cumulative, and every ton we emit, you can check it off against our children and grandchildren.
As cabinet members defend climate action.
This wasn't the holiday in Acapulco these tourists had been expecting.
Mexico reeling from simultaneous twin hurricanes. Arctic sea ice, sixth lowest on record. Plus, it's confirmed, toxic oil and gas leaks in Colorado floodwaters.
All of those toxic leaks and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Fracking is actually incredibly good for our environment. The last thing that's going to contaminate your groundwater is a fracking operation.
Wow, could you say anything more absurdly ridiculous, Alex Epstein on Fox News?
Nature doesn't give us a clean environment. We have to clean it up.
Yeah, all right, I give up. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the climate change denialist industry is flipping out in advance of this UN IPCC report coming out next week. They've even gone so far as to create this phony report by something they call the NIPCC, a non-peer-reviewed study by a couple of fossil fuel industry folks on the right. Fox News is even reporting that report as if it is legitimate. It's amazing to watch here.
I know. It would be truly laughable if it weren't so tragically uninformed.
And it would be laughable if it was only Fox News, but no, we're seeing the nonsense on Fox News repeated inside the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, but it wasn't too surprising to see Republican climate science denial and support for coal on display at a House hearing on Wednesday.
Here's the reality of temperature changes over the last 40 years. No increase in temperature.
Really? Who knew?
Yeah, that was Republican House member David McKinley of Coal State, West Virginia, patiently explaining climate science to physicist and new energy secretary Ernie Moniz and air quality expert Gina McCarthy, the new administrator of the EPA, on how they and the world scientists just don't understand climate science. But both McCarthy and Moniz were blunt in this hearing about the reality of climate change and the critical need to reduce emissions. Here are some excerpts from the testimony of Energy Secretary Moniz.
The threat from climate change is real and urgent, and the basic science behind climate change is simple. Carbon dioxide makes the Earth warmer, and we are emitting more and more of it into the atmosphere. Every ton we emit now irreversibly commits our children and grandchildren to the risk of climate disruption. We have to act in this decade.
But surprisingly, the science-denying Republicans who dominate the committee were a bit muted in their science denial and instead denied reams of economic data that show pollution regulations help the economy. Republicans predicted dire economic impacts from any attempts to rein in coal pollution. The focus on economic attacks appears to be a new strategy from Republicans to hide their anti-science beliefs because it just doesn't fly with younger voters. Meanwhile, it's official. After a flurry of desperate propaganda from the climate change denial industry, Arctic sea ice at the North Pole continues its clear, long-term melting trend. Now that the Arctic summer melt season is over, the actual data shows sea ice this year is the sixth lowest on record. That's better than last year's record low, but sorry, deniers, sixth lowest on record does not equal a recovery.
I'm confused. Rush Limbaugh said just this week that Arctic ice is at an all-time record high. Fox News said the same thing, and even Congressman David McKinley from West Virginia said in the hearings yesterday,
the Arctic ice is actually increased by 60%.
It's almost as if these people are just making stuff up.
Yep. In Colorado, more confirmed oil and gas spills into the raging floodwaters. So far, at least one oil pipeline and one natural gas pipeline have ruptured, for sure. Three natural gas wells have leaked into the floodwaters, and one oil storage tank ruptured and dumped over 5,000 gallons into the Platte River in Nebraska. That's what we know so far.
And I expect we're going to learn more as the floodwaters recede. Talk about costs of global warming. While we don't yet know that this storm that dumped a year's worth of rain in about 6 days in Colorado is tied to climate change, It's looking pretty likely, and it's looking pretty expensive.
While we've been focused on the disaster in Colorado, biblical flooding has been hitting Mexico.
Tens of thousands are now stranded in this flooded city. At least 250,000 people have been affected so far.
Twin storms struck Mexico simultaneously. Tropical Storm Miguel on the Pacific coast, Hurricane Ingrid on the Atlantic coast, inundating vast areas of the country, causing widespread flooding and mudslides. 97 people confirmed dead so far. The magnitude of this is insane. The tourist town of Acapulco is completely cut off, and residents and tourists are stranded on rooftops with no food and no water.
And then there was this.
Crocodiles like this one have been hampering relief efforts.
Crocodiles?
In the streets. Not kidding.
Unbelievable. For much more on that story and those we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation while you're there to help keep the Green News Report on your public airwaves. Find us and like us at Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round.
Exactly halfway through the program for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And thanks going out to Don for taking us down to only $55 to go to meet Darlene's challenge this evening. You know, she's putting $100 on the table for, and she'll match the first $100 that come in. And wow, how desperately that is needed. So only $55 more to go, and that would take us down 515, 450. That would leave only $315 to raise to get us out of the hole that we're in. Now, I want to share a couple of things with you, because, and these are only examples of the, I got a bunch of them. The responses to last night's discussion about the difference between knowledge and belief. And they were really helpful emails, too. First came a note from Andy. Andy from Alexandria, Virginia, he reminds me. After hearing you and Jim debate last night, I decided to do some homework and make sure I had my facts straight, and I ran across something I'd forgotten about, probably because the statistic makes both my stomach and my brain lurch. And by way of just a reminder, going back to something Ron sent along last night, we were so deep in the conversation I didn't get to. Ron is notorious for these. I can just hear it, said Ron.
Dear friends, today on the EIB network, we'll be discussing the beliefs of ancient cultures vis-a-vis death and the afterlife.
Nah, that ain't never gonna happen on the EIB network. So, at any rate, Andy wrote in from Alexandria, and as he said, after hearing you and Jim debate last night, I decided to do some homework and make sure I had my facts straight, and I ran across something I'd forgotten about, probably because the statistic makes both my stomach and my brain lurch. According to the latest Gallup poll on the issue, 46% of the adult population of the United States hold creationist views. According to Wolfram Alpha, a great tool for math facts, by the way, that's about 96.74 million people, backing up my assertion that millions and millions of people in this country actually believe that Adam and Eve rode to church on a dinosaur, or as it was more appropriately put, in a movie of a couple of decades back.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah, that, by the way, from the classic, well, sort of modern, Mean Girls, and it is a depiction, by the way, of those homeschoolers of whom cranky old Grandpa Freedom Ron Paul is so fond. So, yeah, it does turn out to be, as I asserted, millions and millions, tens of millions of Americans believe that the Earth is just slightly younger than the written recipe for beer. And, of course, Andy provides links. The Wikipedia entry, he continues, on young Earth creationism also says since 1982, between 40 and 50% of adults in the United States say they hold the creationist view that God created humans in their present form at one time within the last 10,000 years, when Gallup asked for their views on the origin and development of human beings. I went, says Andy, so far as to follow the reference provided for that and was surprised to find something similar to the spreadsheet that Jim was talking about. The upshot of all of this is that since at least 1982, just under half the adult population of the United States has held some type of young Earth creationist view, at least according to Gallup. If anyone else in the Horn family commune has statistics contrary to that, I'd actually love to hear them, since this is not something I suspect, wish to be right about. As I said, the fact that such an enormous chunk of the population are so easily deceived is just mind-boggling to me. But, yeah, I'd like to be wrong about it, but this is one of those little corners of the world where I'm not often wrong. And in point of fact, it wasn't just Gallup, but the Pew Forum for Religion in America, who take their job of monitoring the nation's religious views pretty seriously, surveyed various and sundry religious groups to get a handle on the question of evolution in the American populace. The total U.S. population percentage of people who believe that who agree that evolution is the best explanation for the origin of human life on Earth is no greater than 48%. 52%, according to the Pew Forum, you know, turtles or riding dinosaurs to church or conversations with gossipy water moccasins, what have you. By percentage, 81% of Buddhists agree with evolution. 80% of Hindus agree with evolution. 77% of those of the Jewish faith agree with evolution. 72% of those who are unaffiliated with any particular faith but consider themselves somehow faithful agree with evolution. Among Roman Catholics, and this is where the big fall off begins, among Roman Catholics, only 58% of its membership in the United States thinks that evolution best explains the origin of life and human beings on Earth. And then members of the various Orthodox churches come into play, 54% of them agreeing with the theory of evolution. Then comes your mainline Protestants. That would be your not insane Lutherans, your not insane Presbyterians, and your not insane Episcopals, that type. Your mainline Protestants, only 51% of them agree that evolution explains the origins of humanity on Earth. That's followed by Islam. Only 45% of Muslims in the United States hold that evolution is the best explanation for the origins of life on Earth. Then comes historical black Protestant sects. 38% of them agree with the theory of evolution. Then comes your evangelical, we know them as evangelical Protestants. That's your Baptists, your Methodists, your weird snake-handling Presbyterians, your Lutherans from the Hoboken Synod or whatever they are. Your evangelical Protestants, only 24% of them hold with the theory of evolution. Only 22%, I always told you the Mormons were weirder than the Baptists, only 22% of Mormons hold with evolution. I'm surprised the number's that high, seeing as how they think that Jesus and the devil were brothers who came from planet Kolob. And then come the Jehovah's Witnesses bringing up the rear at 8%. 8% of Jehovah's Witnesses agree with the theory of evolution. All told, these are those nearly 100 million American citizens who get from day to day in life denying the very science that explains their existence. So with all that having been said, I go back to Andy, who also says, all that being said, I think that behind what Jim was saying last night was an acknowledgement that the universe is a hell of a lot richer than any of us realize. He, like many very intelligent and empathic, moderately religious folks in this country, view that possibility through the lens of faith. I don't think he's so much trying to be argumentative for the sake of it, though. I sense it may be more that he's afraid the only two choices us big-mouth non-believers accept are either effing crazy or atheist. I don't think that's really what you're saying, Bob, and certainly not where I stand either. But people have been polarized about these issues for so long that it can be easy to forget there are more than two sides. I myself am not a 100% strict materialist, and I find that many of my views on the big questions don't fit neatly into any paradigm I've yet run across. While I long ago dropped the idea of a loving God and some of the other concepts that Jim and other religious folks hold dear, referencing my previous email about the origin of the word believe, you may recall that from a few shows back, I do sense that behind those concepts is an acceptance and hope for the unknown, and I see plenty of value in that, even if I express it entirely differently. The bottom line is that I hope you guys continue to learn from each other, even if sometimes the loaded words get in the way. I hope all of this made a little bit of sense. Also, sorry if the links made the text a bit messy, but my HTML skills aren't great. Have a good one. Signed, Andy. No, I went and followed every one of the links, and they say what you say they say, Andy. And what they say... I mean, I'm sorry. If you cannot accept a tried, tested, empirically valid theory of science in the absence of anything that even remotely comes close, you're effing crazy. And to the extent that nearly 100 million... almost a third of the entire country, because what are we, 330, 350 million? That's nearly a third of the entire nation thinks that we got where we are because Eve had a conversation with an abstruse anaconda. That's effing crazy. Then this from Eric. Dear Bob Kincaid, you are better than anyone I have ever heard on the radio. Been listening to the radio long, Eric? I mean, really. I mean, thank you, but really. I have sent you a $20 donation to your mailing address. Thank you. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to be looking for it. I've been listening for about a year and have really loved hearing those who call in. Lately, though, I've noticed that Jim seems to call in almost every show. At times he's interesting, but I must say that more often, unlike Sandra, he's quite tedious. Last night's show did it for me, though. For Jim to say that he never heard of creationists believing that Adam and Eve rode a dinosaur is insane. He asked you for a spreadsheet of people who believe in these follies? He thinks that they're a minority? What? I fear that I will be fast-forwarding my iPod when Jim calls, in the same way that I always zip through President Not Sure's sound bites. 65% of U.S. citizens believe in heaven and hell, while about 90% believe in God. That's spelled G-A-W-W-W-W-D. Bob, it's your show, and you run it, and I'll keep listening. I'll send you checks from now on. The next time you have Sandra on for more than 10 minutes, I'll send another check. Remember, 10 minutes with Sandra, with a smiley face. Take care. Hugs to all the family. Eric in Valley Village. Thanks, Eric. And that is just a sample of some of the stuff that came in based upon last night's theological debate. Oh, yeah, no, that was a compliment, Sandra. Sandra just tweeted, thanks, I think. Oh, no, that was a big compliment. Eric wants to hear more from Sandra. See, you guys have fans. I don't have fans. Y'all have fans. So, there you go. Hear it about 17 minutes before the hour and with $55 to go to... close out Darlene's challenge for the evening. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Not much. In fact, I had a call from a buddy of mine out in Arizona. In fact, he was the guy who recorded that first LP, the first CD, actually. It was LP originally, the Blackface, with Mike Puss on the front of it. The one I sold so many of those album covers to, you know, dart clubs, and they were good. People liked them.
Dart clubs, did you say?
Yeah. They wanted to throw stuff at him. But,
yeah, did you have them actually printed in a circular format so that they would slide easily under the board?
Yeah, no, that was originally done on a LP, believe it or not. That's how long ago that was, you know, when they still had those to the vinyl. But, so I didn't catch a lot of what he talked about tonight, so you're going to have to educate me. I caught a little of it. And he mentioned rape jokes.
Well, I think that's what it amounts to, Bill.
Yeah, well, I will say that there were some attempts at humor in the 60s, early 60s and 50s that, went along those lines. The one I remember was actually an exhibitionist that they arrested, but they had to let him go because of insufficient evidence. So the recipient of the joke was whatever friend of yours that you said, hey, I hear you got arrested for exhibitionism. And you hit him with that punchline, and, of course, it was making crap out of him. But there were comics who told jokes at one point in the history of humor that I've...
Oh, but this, you know, this is under the guise of running ads trying to convince young people to avoid the doctor, because the doctor just might look like a creepy George Bush-faced Uncle Sam and rape you in the butt.
Oh, Jesus, God.
I mean...
Excuse my...
Okay, this is not a poor attempt at humor, and I don't know quite how to express it, but I know you have visual difficulties, Bill.
There's not a damn thing funny about it.
And I know that Kevin in Colorado Springs has visual difficulties.
Nope.
There are moments that there's crap out there you don't want to see.
Well,
do you understand what I'm getting at?
George Bush mask or regulation. I don't care what the story's about. You mentioned that, having to see him, I'll pass on that right there.
Well, sure.
And it's not real funny. I mean, God knows I've heard enough jokes about every politician there is to be told about, you know. I mean, if you're a Civil War buff, there were plenty of things said about Mr. Lincoln that were supposedly funny but weren't, you know. Because American humor has a very, very rough, sarcastic, some of the best comics in our lifetime were guys who could really throw an insult.
Sure.
Because some people were almost born to be insulted with their activities.
You know what? If you go to a comedy club or an act in Vegas, and you're a civilian, a member of the audience, and sitting there at your table, and you've paid for your ticket, and you want to yell at the guy who's on stage that everybody else came to see, not you.
Yeah.
You deserve everything you get in return.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why the guys who had these kind of comebacks, and I use that term because the old Vegas comics were mostly male, I would say, in the 60s. God knows, again, I hate to... nature knows how many people used that I knew that were factory workers and such. Vegas was a big vacation place in the 60s.
Yeah.
Bigger
and on the East Coast, the Poconos.
Yeah. And the Poconos, because those, man, some of those, I was talking to a friend of mine who's Jewish, and she had never heard the term Borscht Belt comedian before. And I had to explain what it was. You know, it was the kind of comic that, and in the vaudeville days, a lot of times they'd have, in certain neighborhoods, like in a city like Cleveland here, where there was all these little ethnic neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
and there was live vaudeville and local bars, if you go in to see a comedian, hell, he might speak English with the dialect of the people in the 1920s who were immigrants themselves.
Well, consider the early 1900s up to the 1930s or so.
Yeah.
There was a whole separate, and I guess it still exists in some vestigial form, but there was a whole separate subset of Yiddish theater and Yiddish comedy.
Yes. Well, ethnicity used to be a point of pride with a lot of people. And it should be, you know, a point of pride as to where, you know, the things that you, that the old folks could tell you about what it was like living in such and such an area of the world.
Oh, I remember a million years ago when I was young attending the wedding of a very dear friend of mine up in Pittsburgh, and the reception was held at the Italian American Club.
Yeah.
And little redneck boy from Alabama that I was, I had no idea what an Italian American club was. And around the block, there was a Polish American club. And two blocks over and one block east was the Hungarian American club.
Well, most places you just mentioned are why Cleveland was loaded with some of the best ethnic restaurants. You, I mean...
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, there was places on Buckeye Road, which is a Hungarian enclave. My God, what was it? Viennese veal, you know.
Yeah, Wiener Schnitzel.
Wiener Schnitzel, or my grandmother used to make the best chicken paprikash in the world, but I didn't want to eat it when I was nine. Don't give me that stuff. Give me a hamburger, you know.
Sure.
It's age.
The ignorance of youth.
Now, if I could find somebody that could make paprikash as good as my grandmother, I'd be shocked. It's just, because that's what people, my mother's mother went back to Germany in the late 20s, and when she came back, she brought $100 mark bills. Now, you knew what was going on in Germany at that point in time.
Yeah, they were tinder.
Yeah.
Not legal tender, tinder.
You talk about, we thought we had it here with inflation. It was crazy, and you know, there's a lot that I've heard historians argue back and forth and blame a lot of that problem in Germany on what they had to pay the English and the French as reparations for World War One. But a lot of that Treaty of Versailles could be looked at pretty hard today and say, hey, that was really not the, you know, because most Americans don't know about the Depression here now. American students, they don't teach you about that stuff.
Right.
And
Ron in Raleigh just wrote in and said, I'm sure Mr. Stress is aware of the Chitlin' Circuit, comics like Red Fox and Pigmeat Markham and others applied their craft.
It was the Theater Owners Booking Association. I was just talking to a friend of ours about that. The TOBA, among the professional entertainers, they called it the Tough on Black Artists Booking Group. But they booked black clubs. Because it's so hard, by today's standards, even for a person like me who goes back, you know, I was born in the mid-40s, for God's sake. I don't know if they teach these kids how bad racial segregation was and how small time. My second wife told me about going to Florida, and there was an elderly African-American man standing outside. He'd been working for the restaurant, you know, doing yard work. And he's dying of thirst. She brought him a cup of water. And she said she got more dirty looks than she thought nature ever made. Well, she never took a good look in the mirror, I suppose. But that's my nasty sense of humor there. But it was unbelievable. I mean, a young kid like me, you say, what the hell was with these people? You know, because yeah, I was living in a neighborhood that was, the projects that I lived in that were opened in 39. My family moved in 48. I was 5 years old. And you get on a, man, they were running trackless trolleys. They still had streetcars all over the place because some of them I rode on in 75 when I was visiting Toronto. And talking to the motorman and found out they bought those from Cleveland in 53, the ones I was riding on. And, of course, being a streetcar buff, you know, that brought things back to me. But, yeah, the small time, it was so not only cruel, but it was just extremely ridiculously meaningless small time crap that could be poured on people, not giving a man a glass of water after he's been working his butt off. What the hell is that about, you know? That's why when I read this short history of the Civil War that this guy with the unlikely name of Fletcher Pratt wrote, it changed me. I was a guy who was, as a young kid, 7, 8 years old, you know, I looked at the Confederate soldier as a valiant freedom fighter. And damn it, they were still great fighting men. There's no doubt about that. You can't take the truth away. They were both men on both sides were so damn extremely brave because of the evolution of the weapons that, you know, me, I'd have been headed for home after the first battle. Let me out of here. Go west, young man. Get away from this crap. But people are still fighting this crap today. Because you were talking about some of the people who would like to pull out of the Union again.
No, that's a full-on movement now.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. Colorado, California.
Well, my answer is if we had a big enough saw and could physically cut the country in half and let them float away.
Jim tells me that at the height of Weimar inflation, 4 trillion marks equaled one American dollar.
Well, my grandmother told me you had to have a bushel basket of money to buy a loaf of bread. She went back in 28 and came back to Cleveland and came back in 29.
Oh, by the way, I have to tell you, this is another one of those anniversaries, Bill. And it's an anniversary that has something to do with someone whom you have for whom you've evinced respect. This is the anniversary of the holding of the line by the Rock
of Chickamauga. George H. Thomas.
Yep. The man, the Virginian who did not commit treason against his nation.
Well, when I was going back and forth with a fellow from a Sixth Emperor Tyrannus, I said if Thomas had Lee had faced Thomas at Sharpsburg, that war in the East would probably have ended that day. Because I often wondered, I think until Meade was given command of the Army of the Potomac and the Army had gotten really good, I mean, good by the standpoint of survival, that was the first beating that Lee ever took was Gettysburg. The first
outright whipping.
Yeah. And now modern, there's a lot of modern writers who have come up and criticized Lee because of his spirit was of the offensive. Take the offensive, attack, attack, attack. And the weaponry and the tactical things were changing rapidly. But I like to point out to people who are, forget help, folks. I tell them, go back and look west of the Mississippi and tell me all the big Confederate victories that happened there.
Yeah, not so much.
Not too many. Because when those fellas out west were fighting guys...
Well, why do you reckon Grant got called back from the west?
Yeah, that's why they brought him to the east. And to me, he was like a First World War general. Charge!
And do the simple math of I have X bullets and... They have, you know, X minus human beings.
A lot less.
I'm going to win because I got the bullets.
Yeah. But what got me started with the end of the nightly monologue was anything that about rape. There's nothing funny about it. But there was a lot of guys going around telling jokes about it.
And the sad thing is, there's a certain segment of our society, they are generally referred to as Republicans, who have not yet figured out that rape is not funny.
Yeah,
and to see these two commercials encouraging young people to not get health care and to run the risk of getting sick and dying and not being able to do anything about it, and to have that visualized by a macabre, giant-headed Uncle Sam rising up from beneath the table and between the legs of a young woman whose feet are in the stirrups, with the visually stated point that he is going to vaginally violate her. God, Bill, how much sicker can these bastards get?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. But I had a close friendship with one of the women who founded the Rape Crisis Center in Cleveland, and man, did she educate my fat ass in a hurry. You know, she straightened me out, told me things that they use to educate people, and my God, how can anybody find anything humorous along those lines?
Well, but in this day and age, Bill, if it advances your political agenda, and your political agenda happens to be tied to making sure that millions of human beings remain uninsured, anything goes.
And I can't believe this, because my big gripe about this health care plan is how much input the insurance companies had in it.
Right. And consequently, that goes to the conversation last night, the other conversation, the second half conversation with Jim. The insurance companies want the billions of dollars that they are going to be given. And the Republican Party, in hollering to their mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking base that we gotta defund Obamacare, I just don't understand how that plays out, because you know what, Senator Goober McGoobin Doofus of the third district of Mississippi, Stan, he will not take a call from a teabagger saying, I want you to defund Obamacare. But by God, when the CEO of Great Big Health Care Insurance Corporation of America dials up, he's on the phone before it rings to take the call. So what's... I'm absolutely at sea over this.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's... Well, I have a personal story of being in Canada, a good fishing lake up there near Peterborough, and I had dental work done the week before I took off, and the guy pulled the wrong tooth, which in an old Western movie would have got him shot.
Right.
You know? So I'm in the
last place. Well, but you know what? These things happen in the medical miracle that is the United States of America. I remember back during the first term of Dim Leader's regime, when he was trying to get tort reform through the Congress, and he referred to the case of a person who went in to have one leg amputated, and the doctor malpracticed on the person.
Wrong leg.
And cut off the wrong leg, and upon realizing the mistake, then still had to go back and cut off the bad leg.
Yeah, so...
And, of course, the case went to court.
Court.
And the person received some sort of substantial award, although knowing the nature of court awards in this era,
yeah,
it was probably not fully sufficient to compensate for the losses.
Takes you a lifetime to collect, too, you know.
Well, there's that, too. But George W. Bush said of that person, it's just one life's lottery.
Oh, is that funny, huh? It's cynical as hell.
I mean, there are stories about women who have the wrong breast removed from breast cancer, who, instead of having a single radical mastectomy, wind up having two of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these are not, though, these occurrences are not that rare, Bill.
Well, when you see them, I saw my doctor one time run back to the office and consult the eight ball. I said, Bill, you're in trouble. I'd leave if I were you. This guy is not too sure. But I'm going to get off the phone here, but I'm going to leave you with my belief about certain members of the right wing. They not only convinced me to believe in evolution, but I think some of them have made a U-turn somewhere. And they're going backwards.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell can you say about some of these people? Are they just that plain stupid, or what?
Well, look at the truckers that we started the evening with.
Yeah.
They're gonna have a trucking convoy down to Washington D.C. against corruption, against the Constitution. I doubt if half of them can even pronounce corruption against the Constitution, Bill.
I want to see these guys punch themselves in the face. That's going to be a pretty funny sight.
Well, there you go.
I'll let you go.
Oh, God, you're good at it, Bill.
Well,
you take care.
It comes quick, you know?
Yeah. Well, that comes from years of practice.
Well, you know what bothers me is I'm getting old to the point where I forget names of authors and things that I used to know by just thinking about it. And because the author's names are, I was trying to think of the guy that the name of the book was The Rising Sun, and I couldn't think of the author. I have it, of course, now written down, so I can, because I've read the book so many years ago. It was a big selling World War II history. Let me consult the old computer. Oh yeah, John Toland was the guy who wrote it. He's written several. So that was a big seller about 72. I mean, everywhere I went, somebody had a copy of it sitting in a restaurant reading it. Because it was really accurate, one of the first big, accurate, popular histories of the Asian theater of war. And because people say, why do you read so much about it? I said, you keep learning stuff. Because more and more and more stuff comes squeezing out from the censored files in the government. Things that you didn't know about before, they start telling you the actual truth. I mean, the study of the Cuban Missile Crisis, 2 minutes to midnight. I mean, I was a kid at 17, 18 years old when that was going on, and I didn't know how.
Yeah, and see, Bill, you raise, even without directly raising it, something that is a valid consideration for anyone who wants to ask questions about what it means to be free,
yep,
what it means to be a true citizen of the Republic, if Republic it still be.
Yep.
I personally think it's an empire. Yep. And that is, and I'm not trying to be demeaning in this, but because God knows I wouldn't. You know how much respect I have for you. But there are those out there in this country who would say, what does a harp player in a blues band need to know about the Battle of Chickamauga?
I don't know. It was just something I got into early, but there's more to it.
Well, and precisely, it is not a matter of why you need to know. It is that we are better for what we do know. If you think about that book by Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451, where the purpose of the fire department was to burn books. And so there arose this underground network of people who had memorized entire books. And, you know, that guy over there is Twelfth Night, and that guy over there is Wuthering Heights, and she is Dracula, and this lady over here, well, she's Bleak House.
And guys who were writing for, like, detective magazines like Black Mask, with Hammett had two short stories. One concerned itself with illegal immigration coming in below San Francisco from China, and the other one was set in an area that wasn't a state when it was written, but it's now a state called Arizona. And in that particular one, the Continental Op was assigned as a detective, and one of the backstories in that was people streaming across the border from south of the border. Let's see, how old is that? It was published in 1917 or 18 or whatever,
yeah.
21. The same, or Raymond Chandler had was it The Lady in the Lake? Where there was a doctor who was treating movie stars with drugs. You know, gee whiz. We thought that just happened, say, with Michael Jackson or Elvis or anybody. Fill in the blank. No, that book was published in the early 30s, I believe. Chandler was writing The Lady in the Lake and those kind of things that he wrote. One Bogart movie that I forget what it was, the Bogart movie that he was in, there was a Chandler thing. Chandler was the second.
Oh, The Big Sleep.
Name, you know.
The Big Sleep, yeah.
The Big Sleep, thank you.
Oh, anyway, but I did have to tell you, Beth down in Dallas sent me a note last night. There was a book that was free on Kindle on Amazon, which I went and grabbed, and I will read it. I'm going to read it, and I will let you know whether, at least my take on whether it's worth your time. a book called Searching for George Gordon Mead. And it was free on Kindle last night, so I've got it, and I'll let you know.
He was a character that pops into mind because, you know, there was criticism of Meade when he was appointed to head the Army of the Potomac because he wasn't born in this country.
Right.
His mother and father was in the diplomatic service in Spain.
Yeah, where's the birth certificate, right?
Exactly. It brings you right up to date with the same old... All this crap I hear from these right-wingers about Benghazi, I said, well, what I knew about Benghazi was when Rommel and Montgomery were fighting over it.
Right.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
You have yourself a good evening, Bill. It's always good to hear from you.
Take care.
All right, bye now. And we'll keep things rolling along. 304-658-3333 is the number on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. It's about 9 minutes past 8 o'clock here on the East Coast as we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, what's happening, Jim?
Another great show.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
But I want to try to kind of change the subject a little bit.
That's cool.
And because it just kind of hit me a couple hours ago about like the argument about basically between whether what the quote unquote founding fathers meant. It, when they were writing the Constitution, was whether it was supposed to basically stay static or evolve. I lean toward the side of evolve.
As do I.
Yeah. But, I mean, you got like a lot of, if I'm not mistaken, conservative Republicans, that's what they meant at that moment. And that is like so goddamn fucking retarded to me. I mean, things change. You don't treat a 5-year-old the same as you treat a 15-year-old or a 21-year-old, you know?
Well, that's the truth.
Yeah.
And as part of that conversation that evolved last night, that's the whole thing. Even the people who had sat in on the framing of the Constitution got an object lesson early on the fact that it was going to have to be changed. And they didn't have any delicate tea and sandwiches conversations about whether or not to fix the vice presidential succession issue. They went and did it in a hurry because they didn't want Jefferson and Burr ever again. Not that they didn't want them. They didn't want that problem.
Right, because they both hated each other so much.
Well, when it came down to it, by then they did.
Yeah, well, basically, I mean, if we were going with that same situation, I mean, you would have had Bush president and Gore vice president, and
wouldn't that have been jolly?
Yeah, it would have been freaking-tastic, orgasmic.
Yeah.
Well,
look at the rise of the nullification controversy as fostered by people like John C. Calhoun. The nullification crisis contained the seeds of what would later become, you know, the great big blood-sodden conflagration that engulfed this nation between 1860 and 1865. Or 1861 and 1865.
Yeah. Well, I mean the whole thing about everybody's free, just the white people, men. That's kind of, yeah. I mean, if it was a Monty Python skit, it'd be a lot funnier if you weren't one of the people living through it. You know, and then you try and talk to people, and they just, especially down here where I live, for the moment. They just seem to accept everything. La-di-da. I mean, it's just like there was a guy. Did I tell you this about the guy at work? He's been at the job I'm working, and he's like, they offered him like full time. He said, no, I just want part time. Then they changed it to, well, No, we're just hiring part-time because of Obamacare. The subtext is Obamacare. And it's like, that's such BS, you know? It's just incredible. And he kind of believed it, and I talked to him a little bit, and they're just trying to save money. They don't give a rat's ass about you.
Let's take a quick look at that, Jim, because anybody who's listened to this program for any amount of time knows that I think the Medicaid expansion of the Affordable Care Act is really, really important.
I think it's very important. I think it's good. It would have been better if we could have gotten single payer. But the
Medicaid expansion is a road to single payer, and that's why the Supreme Court had to kill the mandate for it, so that states had to opt in. Let's say you work for really big Corporation of America. Speaking of Monty Python skits, you work for really big Corporation of America, and you're in a state where the state has opted in to the Medicaid expansion. Well, it is not a philosophical thing about whether or not Obamacare, the Affordable Care, Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, is good or bad. Corporations in states where the Medicaid expansion has been adopted know that if they cut everybody to part-time, then they're all going to go over and get on the expanded Medicaid. And therefore, the really big Corporation of America won't have nearly the health care costs that it had. And this reflects, Jim, the reality that if you sat down, maybe you'd have to get them liquored up or, you know, blow bong hits in the CEO's face for a while. But after a little while, you'd explain, you know, universal health care. They'd go, well, hell yeah, bring it on. That means I don't have to pay for no health care no more. And it's true, Medicare for all. Now, on the other hand, it's an entirely different story in a place like Louisiana, Stan, where if you're part-time and they have opted, you know, because of Piyush Jindal, opted out of the Medicaid expansion, then you're part-time and you're just, you know, SOL for health care. But even then, you can go and look at the exchanges and still wind up paying maybe less for health care than you would from your employer. There is a certain amount of tactical genius involved in this bill. I don't agree with supporting the for-profit healthcare insurance industry, but by the same token, if we can keep it alive, then I think everybody from the healthcare insurance industry all the way down to their paid lackeys in the Republican Party and some of them in the Democratic Party know that it really is the first, you know, bong death knell of for-profit healthcare in this country, and I think it was intended to be such.
I think that's there's, like I say, I voted for Obama twice, like I had a choice, that or the Green Party, I guess. But and a lot of things, I understand he's doing it for strategical and maybe just partly he might believe some of the crap he spews some of the time. But I think he actually is trying to do some pretty good. Good is as much as his hands are tied. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
I'm not a big fan by any stretch of the imagination.
Neither am I. But I'm also enough of a realist, Jim, to understand that in an empire, you're not going to get an emperor, an apostate emperor, who wants to tear the empire down.
Well, who's going to last long if he does?
Well, there's that.
Just ask JFK. You know, as Mick Jagger so aptly put, you know, I shouted out who killed the Kennedys when, after all, it was you and me. Great line, great song. But
I did want to tell you, since you mentioned the part-time business and everything, I wanted to mention that there is a good news story out there, and my good news stories have lately been a little bubble off plum. This one is a really honest-to-goodness, no-kidding good news story, Jim. While I was out in Texas, we had to wander into a grocery store one evening because I was desperately in need of some instant decaf. And I guess the biggest grocery store chain in Texas is called H-E-B. And so we wandered into an HEB. It was this big, magnificent grocery store chain. Being Texas, I doubt if they're union workers. But still, a big old magnificent grocery store. And I read a story a couple of days ago from Texas where HEB said, screw all of these idiot yahoos running their mouths about the Affordable Care Act. We're not going to lay off anybody, and we're not going to put anybody to part-time just to keep from implementing the Affordable Care Act. We're going to take care of our workers.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, you know, great reason to shop at HEB, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'm in Louisiana, but I'm about to jump in the car and just drive over there, shop there. But no, seriously, it's just the whole weird thing about that is, yeah, with the rich, with their 1%, if they don't, you know, maybe they could just let a little bit more of their money drop down. I mean, when you're dead, you're dead, and when you're not going to be able to look back from heaven or hell and see what your financial record was, and you had the highest financial record. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Kind of strange.
Well, see, that's a perspective that you understand, Jim, that you will be hard-pressed to get somebody who is worth some several millions of dollars to understand, and that's fact.
Right. And
they don't understand. They don't own their money. Their money owns them.
Well, I know that. I've noticed people who come, because I've come into contact with people, wealthy people and stuff, and people just think they're like two, three steps away from Jesus Christ. They just, oh, well, they made all this money, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah.
And once again, that's the pernicious effect, long-term, of Calvinism on the United States and Puritanism. Oh. Because remember, Calvinism says that the degree to which you are wealthy is a manifestation of how much God likes you.
Oh, yeah, well, exactly. Just like with some of the senators or congressmen who are Republicans, of course, who had sex with hookers or something. And one was a Louisiana senator.
Vitter.
And they gave him a standing ovation and whatever. But, you know, Bill Clinton gets a blowjob, and that's a big deal, or anything else.
Well, that clip from last night with Alan Keyes on the religious program Pray in Jesus' Name, that's not even supposed to be talking politics because they're a 501c3 charitable or religious organization. Alan Keyes saying our focus needs to be on electing an impeachment and removal Congress in 2014.
You know what? I'm glad you said that because it just reminded me. I think right now you and I and a couple other people listening should start in the tax, the non-tax on religion. I think religion should be taxed. It's sprouting a point of view. And one way or the other, it ends up being political, whether you think it's, unless you're living in some little, what's the Jewish thing, where they, one little kibbutz. If you're living in a little kibbutz, okay, you're excluded. Everybody else, you pay taxes on it. What do you think?
Kind of sounds good. Sounds workable. Sounds decent. But then again, I'd just like to see churches pay taxes on their real property. Preachers have to pay into the income tax. That's why the money of the church gets squirreled away inside the assets of the church.
Wait, these are God-fearing men. Do you think they would actually do that? That's like somebody killing the president because they didn't like their policy. That would never happen here in America because we're God's country. Jesus watches over us.
Jesus, take the wheel.
All right, well, I'm going
to
listen.
I refuse to play that song, by the way.
All right.
And you can thank me later.
Thank you, Bob.
Hey, Jim, you have a good evening, man.
All right.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from deep in the heart of Louisianistan. Bill talking about humor and how nasty it can be reminded me of this story. This is worth playing. You know that Ken Cuccinelli is running for governor of the Old Dominion, Virginia. And you know, of course, that he's been caught up in scandal because he likes to take gifts from people who have lots and lots of money and doesn't understand why it is that a politician ought not be doing that. Okay. So his poll numbers have been sort of craptastic. His unfavorable rating is around 51%, according to a Quinnipiac poll. And he was supposed to make a personal appearance at, you know, some little stop along the way on the Virginia hustings. And this is where a guy named John Whitbeck comes into play. He's the 10th Congressional District of Virginia Republican Committee chairman. Not just some schmuck, not just some yahoo. No, this guy's the chairman of the Old Dominion 10th Congressional District GOP. I mean, this, you know, he's a player, right? Yeah. All right. Nothing says yes, it is. I said Ken Cuccinelli, and Sandra tweeted at me, that is a nasty-ass-sounding name. I was about to say something. It sounds like something you get from a toilet seat. But, well, it is. It's a nasty-ass-sounding name. Thank you, Sandra. So, Jason Whitbeck is there to warm up the crowd outside, the Republican faithful there in the 10th Congressional District. And I guess Cuccinelli is late. So he's got to keep the faithful happy. And nothing keeps a crowd for a political event happy like telling them an old knee slapper. You know, if you go to Dale Carnegie classes and learn how to win friends and influence people, they'll often tell you, start them off with a little bit of funny. Give them something to laugh about, and then move into the guts of your speech. Jason Whitbeck understands that rule. Again, this is old Virginia. I'm guessing this might not play so well in a place like Brooklyn. But, and again, this is one of those instances where it's not, I expect this kind of crap from Republicans. But, on the other hand, listen to the laughter of the crowd. Laughter is a form of assent. Laughter is a form of agreement. And it's not like these are uneasy chuckles. This is a, ho, 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 ain't that funny. So, John Whitbeck, chairman of the 10th Congressional District Republican Committee in Virginia, warming up the crowd.
Well, you know, I'm a Catholic, and one of the things that we, I'm John Whitbeck, I'm the Senate chairman. One of the things that we celebrate nationally is the new Pope. The new Pope's in relatively short order. And when the Pope is elected, the head of the Jewish faith goes to the Vatican and brings a ceremonial piece of paper. It's very old, it dates back hundreds of years. And he comes into the Pope's office and he ceremonially hands the piece of paper to the Pope, the new Pope, and then the new Pope
ceremonially rejects it, and the head of the Jewish faith leaves, and Herod goes on about it. Well, this time around, the Pope said, I got to find out what's on the piece of paper. So he actually takes it from the head of the Jewish faith, he opens it, he looks at it, and he closes it, and he notices, and his Jewish counterpart says, what was it? He says, well, that was the bill from the last supper. So, on that note, we're waiting for Ken Cuccinelli, and he's on his way.
So you caught the laughter. I hope the audio was good enough for you to get the joke, because I really don't want to repeat it. And nothing gets them laughing at a Republican political rally in the 10th Congressional District like a good Jew joke. He starts out by saying, I'm a Catholic, and we just celebrated the election of a new pope. I'd kind of like to run that YouTube past Pope Frank and see how he responds to it, because this interview that he gave to some journalistic outfit in Italy suggests that maybe he wouldn't be laughing and a knee slapping like the faithful were out there in front of that storefront in Old Virginia. By the way, laughing all the way, there's somebody in the crowd. It was video, so I can see where you can't. Laughing along all the way, somebody in the crowd standing there with an American flag in one hand, and yeah, you got it. No, not the Virginia flag with the Sic Semper Tyrannis Latin on it. No, hell no. No, an American flag and that godforsaken, filthy rag, the Gadsden flag with the stupid snake on it and the don't tread on me. In other words, a teabagging moron. And it turns out it's the bill for the Last Supper. And so with that said, we're waiting for Ken Cuccinelli. I kill me. Wrecked him. Damn near killed him. I am a funny one. Jew jokes in Virginia. What are the Republicans taking their after dinner speaking courses from George Allen? Welcome to America, macaca. Don't ever let it be said that we don't have a sense of humor here in the Old Dominion. Goodness me, I'm gonna have to wear my truss next time. My herniator's acting up. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good macaca. Yeah, that's the punchline, Marty. And granted, John Whitbeck will never win any awards for how to deliver a funny. Starting with the fact that he thinks Jew jokes are funny. But no, the punchline was, and it turns out it's the bill for the Last Supper. Because, you know, those Jews are tight with their money, huh? And they're always money grubbing. Ha ha! Oh, goodness. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Goodness. Now, to be fair, as quick as it went around, you know, they didn't. The Cuccinelli campaign, yeah, and it really does make me scratch places that I don't like to scratch in Cuccinelli. The Cuccinelli campaign did not immediately disavow themselves and distance themselves from John Whitbeck's Jew joke. But once it went around that John Whitbeck was out there telling, then the Cuccinelli campaign said, oh, we disavow this joke that Ken Cuccinelli told. I'm sure the Ken Cuccinelli campaign had absolutely nothing to do with selecting John Whitbeck to do the audience warm-up. But those kind of jokes, they play real good with the folks that that carry Gadsden flags. Nice, huh? In 2013. Did you hear the one about Anne Frank? Whew. The other night, I think it was Jim who suggested my next trip to Washington, D.C. should include a trip to the Holocaust Museum. May I respectfully suggest that Ken Cuccinelli and John Whitbeck would do a lot better, would be far more in need of it than I ever will. What a knee slapper. Liv in South Carolina following up, subject line, HEB grocery stores. HEB is owned or was by Harry E. Butt, a big-time Christian. My brother worked there briefly, stocking shelves some 40-plus years ago. HEB is much the same as Sam Walton before his greedy children took over and just wanted to rape us all for as much as they could bleed from us. Glad you did enjoy Texas. I'm still trying to dust off my boots. I got to wear mine. But it would have been wrong to go down there without them, somehow. But what's interesting is that, yes, they probably are a big fundamentalist evangelical Christian outfit. But unlike places like Hobby Lobby, they have not spent a bajillion dollars going to court to keep from providing contraception to their female workers, or to keep from having to obey the Kenyan, Marxist, Socialist, Fascist, Muslim, Anti-Imperialist Obamacare law. That litany's getting a little tiresome. Golly Moses. They're a filthy lot, aren't they? Right about the airtime for the program this evening, I got a note from our chat room moderator, Lottie. And I've hung on to the story for a little bit. Rather of, oh, what shall we call it, a cautionary tale? Under the subject line, cleaning out the gene pool, Lottie wrote to me, just wanted to let you know there are two less lawful gun owners, hopefully two less Republicans, too. Do they qualify to share a Darwin Award? I know that this is cold-blooded, but this was no gun accident, and luckily no one else was hurt. Maybe tomorrow, says Lottie, I'll feel sorry for him. Two drivers are dead after a road rage incident escalated into a shootout. Really? 2013 in America, and we're still using phrases that were more applicable to the 19th century and folks like this.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah, I'm your Huckleberry. Thank you, Doc. Two drivers are dead after a road rage incident escalated into a shootout. The incident happened around 6:45 p.m. Wednesday on M66 near Steele Street. This is in Michigan. Witnesses tell WZZM 13 that one driver was following another driver, and the other driver, one driver was following another driver too closely. The first driver pulled into a car wash parking lot, and the other driver followed the first driver into the same parking lot. Witnesses say that the driver of the following car fired shots and the first driver returned fire. Both drivers were shot and killed. Authorities say both men, ages 43 and 56, had license to carry concealed weapons. That means they were lawful gun owners. And their respective families are probably viewing the other family as awful gun owners. And we can only wonder how many concealed carry permits were in the family, and is this going to be a much more deadly version of Family Feud? Their family watched it happen James Pullum was the 43-year-old. 56-year-old Robert Taylor was the other individual. After a confrontation between the two men outside the vehicles, they exchanged shots that ended up being fatal to both men. Because freedom! Wolverines! By the way, Marty did a little bit of homework. He said Generation Opportunity, the producers of the rape commercials, the Uncle Sam Will Rape You commercials. Marty did a little homework, a little bit of follow-up. Headline from publicintegrity.org, nonpartisan youth movement has deep GOP roots. Generation Opportunity bills itself as a fast-growing nonpartisan organization using its website and popular Facebook pages to urge civic-minded young people to take action by doing things like registering to vote, organizing local events, and writing letters to the editor. But for a nonpartisan organization, its messages sound a lot like Republican Party talking points.
Most young Americans would prefer to have elected officials in Washington get out of the way of job creators and let those who actually do it for a living drive the solutions, reads a statement from organization president Paul T. Conway regarding recent unemployment numbers.
Paul T. Conway. What you have just done right in the face, Paul T. Conway, right in the face of the goddess of irony is going to have some serious backlash. And consider the results of this recent poll also posted on the website.
Young Americans 18 to 29 say less government, not more, is solution to lack of jobs.
And then there's this one.
Message to elected officials. Cut federal spending. Stop interfering with business. In 2012, we will vote on issues and your record.
This Paul T. Conway asshat, who apparently would presumably have signed off on the rape videos, the funny, funny, funny rape videos, he spent his entire career being one of those Republican hogs who, having gotten his front trotters into the trough, works diligently to get the back ones in there too. He's a former faculty member, among other things, at an organization that trains conservatives, the Leadership Institute. Elaine Chao used to be his boss when she was labor secretary under Dim Leader. She was a hateful thing. And then there's Kellyanne Elizabeth Conway, described in the article as a telegenic conservative consultant, no relation to Paul T. Conway. She conducts the group's polls. She's made about just a little less than $400,000 as of the publication of this article back in November 2011. She had collected around $400,000 in fees from Republican candidates and right-wing organizations. She got $50,000 from Newt Gingrich's nonprofit. Also coming out of the fetid cesspit of Elaine Chao's office at the Department of Labor back in the Dim Leader administration is Matthew Faraki, spokesman for GenOp. He came there, and see, here's where the irony kicks in. He came to GenOp from Americans United for Life. He also worked for former Representative John Hostetler, a pig licking from Taliban, Indiana. Their address is a post office box in Arlington, Virginia. It claims to be a nonprofit, but contrary to the rules for nonprofits, doesn't list its board members or its funders. Its website is registered to a company that keeps site operators' identity secret. Two of its Facebook pages have more than 1.5 million fans, Being American and the Constitution. And they bill themselves as the fastest growing and largest grassroots organization in the nation. It turns out they're a conservative AstroTurf front group. Kevin Bondelli a while back sort of exposed them. Would you sit down to dinner with people who think it's a real political coup, so to speak? To encourage young people to avoid medical care just to score political points? Hey, you're young, you're bulletproof, come on! Prostate cancer and breast cancer and ovarian cancer and cervical cancer, they're for somebody else, not you. Opt out of Obamacare, or else the next thing you know, you'll be a Kenyan socialist, Muslim fascist, anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. Hard to keep track of this scum. Just goes on and on. And then, in medias res, an announcement. I mentioned it toward the end of the program last night, and I wanted to make sure I announced it again tonight. Tomorrow, of course, will be Friday on the front porch, as most Fridays are when I'm here. I haven't been here for the last two Fridays. But tomorrow will be Friday on the front porch, and so anyone wishing to participate needs to shoot me a note. So if you're not part of the Skype Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and you want to participate, shoot me a note. Shoot a note to me, throw me down the stairs, my hat. There's that problem. Send me an internet, like old Ted Stevens used to say. Send me an internet and let me know that you want to get involved, and I'll send your contact information, like, you know, your Skype information, what have you. I'll send that along to Duncan, who is our, and has been for many years now, our Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, and you'll be part of the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. It's a lot of fun, and with any luck at all, even though it was kind of cute at the time, it was also very, very noisy. Nobody will go through the hamburger drive-through during Friday on the Front Porch. But it's a real opportunity to enjoy the spontaneity of the laid-back nature of conversation radio. And before I go any further, let me note we're still stuck at $55. $55 to meet Darlene's generous, kind-hearted challenge. We pulled up $50 short of meeting Janie's challenge or Janie's contribution last night, and we are $55 short of meeting Darlene's. These are great kindnesses, and they're put out there so that people can contribute without having to give a whole bunch of money and double their money in the process. It's a real lost opportunity when that doesn't happen. By the way, a note came in a little while ago from Don. I dropped him a note thanking him for his contribution earlier this evening that took us down to $55. And explained that it really does matter when people help us stay afloat and stay on the air, because that's what this really does mean. And Don wrote back, and where is There it is. Don wrote back and said, I completely understand. I do the same thing every month. Today is my 50th... Get this. Don't talk about courage. I really admire this. Today, Don says, is my 56th day without a cigarette after smoking them for over 50 years. Hence, I'm finding about $25 a week extra in my pocket. With that savings, what better place to place it than with the Horn? Signed, Don in West Tennessee, Red State, Redder County, Redder Neighbors. Thank you, Don. And sincere congratulations. As a nicotine junkie myself, I cannot express how much respect I have for somebody who's able to put the damn things down and walk away. Because anyone who has never had to try to quit smoking cannot begin to conceptualize how godforsaken difficult it is to do. So kudos to you, Don, and thank you for your willingness to help. Don and Sal and Karen are the ones who have joined in to help meet Darlene's challenge this evening. And there's Kate. Thank you, Kate. Kate got tired of waiting around and just finished off the challenge herself. Thank you, Kate. Anybody who wants to keep going, we can work on the $50 we didn't raise to catch up with Janie last night. Because this is a deep hole, and it's one that directly affects our ability to go on doing this conversation, this program. Thank you, Kate. No, I was reminded of the Friday on the Front Porch announcement because I was looking at this story about one of our favorite Repiglicans. I say that facetiously. Steve King of Iowa Way Stand. The walking argument against high IQs in a certain congressional district in Iowa. This past Friday, they had themselves an immigration event, is how it's described, in Omaha, Nebraska. I think Omaha is an old American Indian word meaning, what the are you white people doing here? Just say it. And that's where Steve King of Iowa Way Stand recounted yet another of his mysterious conversations that he is forever having with people there is no way of verifying actually exist. In this instance, it was an Immigration and Naturalization Service worker named Mike Cutler. And he asked Mike Cutler, as he asks many, how many Americans have died at the hands of illegal immigrants who made it into America? Now, Steve King says that all of the people that he's asked that question of have said, yes, I'm an expert witness, but I have no idea how many. With that as prologue, this.
And I do pray for the family and for the soul of Louise Solowin and this grief that this city suffers and all of us as neighbors and friends and family members and for each one here, for the Catholic nun who was killed by a drunken illegal driver in Virginia, for Jamel Shaw who was killed because he was black, for each one of these family members here and thousands more. Remember that number again, 25,064. That's a four-year tally. That's not a lifetime tally. That's a four-year tally. It's been 5 years since then. That number is certainly larger. We have our work cut out for us, but each of us need to stand up and deliver the objective truth. And while we're doing that, we can still respect the dignity of all humanity. Thank you very much for all of you being here today. Thanks for the invitation. God bless you all.
That's called waving the bloody shirt. Now, having waved the bloody shirt, here's what it boils down to. Steve King says that Mr. Cutler answered, I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you it will be in multiples of the victims of September 11th. Steve King then says, 3,000 times something. 3,000 times something. 3,000 times X is the magnitude of individual tragedies here in America. When you think about the multiples of something like September 11th, or even of one grave here in Omaha... You know, 3,000 times something is something. Who sang that song, Nothing from Nothing Leaves Nothing? Something from... There's something about there about poverty in there, and Steve King just got done voting against people eating food in the United States. Bastards. I didn't tear off down the road of the screwing that the Republican Party gave the hungry in this country this evening, because frankly, I would have a splitting headache had I done so by now. The idea that these people who claim to be the party of God, the party of morals, the grown-ups they've called themselves from time to time, voting to cut $40 billion from the mouths of the hungry. Whew. You needed a tenth circle, Dante, and it needed to be full of I don't know. Ugly. Just ugly. See how that continues to play out. Wonder how, and then again, there's this. I wonder how many people who are going to get their food stamps cut, who actually vote, go out and vote for the people who cut their food stamps. You know, because they've got family values and they want to make sure the homos can't get married. Jesus. Thank you, Diane. Thank you. Diane just finished off meeting Janie's kind contribution from last night. So that puts us at $255 raised tonight. Thank you very much. Kate just noting, thank you, Darlene. No more comments. Thank you all. Tomorrow will be Friday on the front porch, and I look forward to it. Thanks go out every evening to our all-volunteer staff who make so much of this possible, our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, John Fox in Australia, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and, of course, the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org. That's where you go, ACACT.org, if you want to learn how you can be a part of ending the ongoing horror of mountaintop removal. And we do appreciate your efforts, because it is a grassroots movement in the purest sense of the word. Thank you. Thank you so very much to all of you who make it possible for this broadcast to continue day in and day out, and have done so now for these many years. Thank you. You make it possible not just for me to get behind the microphone and do this, but for everyone to be able to listen who wishes to do so. It is a true act of selflessness to help keep all of this going. Thank you very much. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Thank you.
Smith is next on The Horn.